You're listening to the Playing With Words podcast. Hello, I'm Adrian Harris. I'm an actor, writer and director, but what you may not know is that I often create the sound design for theatre shows and the odd radio serial that I produced a few years ago. If you've listened to the previous episodes of this Playing With Words podcast, you'll know that this first series follows me on my journey to research and develop a new play script while exploring the audio design at the same time. On this creative jaunt to write a new play, I've spent more time than I usually would thinking about the sound and how it would become part of the process. Normally that stuff comes during the rehearsal period, when the script is already written. However, I thought I'd try something different, in a way of both developing my writing and my practice as a sound designer. So, what have I learned? I was fortunate enough to speak with experienced creators such as Alison Bowne, who works largely in the world of sound design for computer games and films, and Tim X. Atak, who, as well as being a writer, also composes music and has been working recently in the world of audio drama. By picking these two experts' brains and discovering how they approach their craft, I've created playlists of my own of suitably inspirational music. I've experimented with creating mood, environments, and even the sense of offstage characters using abstract sound effects, and explored many different ways of writing with these things in mind. Now, I've not gone and created an all-singing, dancing, revolutionary audio piece. My aim was never to create a radio drama or an audio play. My point was to create a play for theatre, with live actors. Well, the dead ones tend to give a rather stiff performance. The point of me exploring sound during the writing was to see if it would change my approach. Now, whether it has or not, I'll come back to that a little bit later. So, with a full file of songs and sound effects, I got down to the nitty-gritty of writing the actual script. And along the way, I spoke with Sarah Cunliffe, an emotional counsellor who helped shed some light on the sensitive mental state of my fledgling characters, including PTSD, feelings of disenfranchisement, and living with an abusive relationship, and how recent lockdowns exacerbated those issues. Also, fellow writer Tim Massey shared his different ways of approaching playwriting and how he likes to discover his characters. Taking all these things on board, I then immersed myself in my favourite part of the process. I disappeared in the writing. But as we know, plays do not emerge from their chrysalis perfectly formed. There's a great deal of rewriting to do. But before that, it's always a good idea to give the words a little air. And for that, I took the piece to a Zoom meeting of Southwest scriptwriters, where the script was made available to the fellow writers a week before the meeting. Then, excerpts of the piece were read out and discussed during the evening, where questions and thoughts were exchanged with all the best intentions of aiding the further development of the work. So here we are at the Southwest Scriptwriters meeting on Zoom with actress Stephanie Weston and the stage directions being read by Bryony Pope. We're going to give the first scene of the script a cold reading. So that's no rehearsal, no read-through, just see how the words come off the page. It's a great way to test your script and get some feedback.
A rank of Victorian houses converted into flats. The shadow of a large tree looms across the stage. Jim arrives outside the terrace and looks up. He's in his 40s. He wears a demob suit and carries a kit bag. Helena, a young woman, appears in the entrance hallway of Montague Terrace and she seems flustered.
Hello?
Jim looks over at her, unsure if she's talking to him. She's dressed plainly and has a small box containing a gas mask secured by a string over her shoulder.
Hello? Please?
Mrs. Collier?
Upstairs, this way?
Are you Mrs. Collier?
No, upstairs, please.
I'm here about flat number two.
I need a hand.
Do you know where Mrs. Collier is?
Yes, she's upstairs. But she need to come down to the basement. It's getting late.
Is there somewhere around here I can get a bite? There was nothing on the train and I've lost my ration book.
Oh, her back is giving her the jib, but she worries if there is raid.
Is the Crown still on Queen Street?
Oh, blitzed.
Bugger.
She's like a bird. I tell her she doesn't eat enough.
Who is?
Mrs. Collier, the landlady. Her husband came back from the First War with only one leg, so she always insisted on doing the heavy work. Now she's twisted her back again. Can you help me get her to the basement?
She wants to rest in bed if her back's playing her up.
But she worries if there's a doodlebug comes.
How about the Duke on the high road?
Gone.
Oh, this place has gone to the dogs. Is there anything decent left around here?
This place is nice. It's clean.
Do you work here?
I live in flat number 3.
What about your old man?
It's just me. Well, Mrs. Tanner and her little boy are in with me. It's a bit of a squeeze. Albie, he's only 10. He didn't want to be evacuated. Now they were bombed out, so I have space.
Your accent?
Yes.
Is it German?
Czech.
Oh, you would say that.
Why?
What about the wheat sheaf?
I don't know it.
Do you know anything?
Are you Mr. Evans coming on the train from Colchester?
Yeah, what of it?
Here.
Is that my key? Why do you have my key?
In case Mrs. Collier is having jib with her back again.
I thought you didn't work here.
I work at the post office, but I help Mrs. Collier.
They let you work at the post office?
Me?
Well, your sort.
Yes. It makes it easier for me to send a message to Mr. Hitler. I find it handy for all the stamps I need.
You want to watch it making jokes like that?
Will you help me with Mrs. Collier?
Tell her to stay put. It's better for her back.
She worries.
If a flying bomb hits this rank, being in the basement won't make any difference.
You won't sleep.
Join a club.
Are you demobbed?
Medical discharge.
Air Force?
Do I look like a slick Jim?
Your name is Jim.
I was in the infantry.
You don't look injured.
And you don't sound Czech.
Will you help me?
Maybe this place ain't for me.
You have somewhere better?
Had.
The bombers take it away.
Sort of. Bloody Canadian.
I don't understand.
Forget it.
We all have to pull together. To share.
I don't see why I should have to share with...
With my sort.
Well, it ain't right.
You volunteered?
In 39?
When Poland was invaded.
Yeah.
We were invaded too. Britain promised to help Europe.
Well, you're here, aren't you?
I was living near Terezin.
Is that Bohemia?
A short march from the Sudetenland.
You lot was happy to be part of Germany, as I recall.
And not for the Czechs.
You made it out.
And now I am happy to be here. We're all family.
Family.
Bombs fall, houses fall, families grow.
The air raid siren begins to wail.
Oh, no. I'm coming now.
Elena looks at Jim, who stares up at the sky.
Some places don't deserve to stay standing.
Number 2 is very nice.
Looks dilapidated.
I'm not used to first class.
Oh, you've made yourself at home here.
After a year on the Isle of Man.
Never been.
You should. It was quite nice.
I can't believe the Duke is gone.
We need to go.
I served a lovely pint.
I'm sure.
My man took me to the Duke on the way to my wedding. Gave me the talk, a little late. But he said, you've got to be a master of your own house. It's the only way for you both to be happy. He didn't exactly live by his own code and... Now it's gone.
Where is your wife?
Somewhere in Gloucestershire.
Well, at least she's...
Safe, happy, planning a new life with our daughter.
We've all made difficult decisions.
Yeah, she didn't have to leave. She chose to sod off with her fancy man.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Said she moved after they took a direct hit from a landmine. Said they'd write to me to let me know where they were. I forgot to mention the dashing airman who was helping himself to my family, eh? But what did you say? We've all got to share. Where's my share? What do I get?
I have a little bread.
What's waiting for me, eh?
Mrs. Collier has some dripping.
Is that what it was all for?
So I can make you a sandwich.
No, thank you.
A low heartbeat is heard from inside the house.
Poor Mrs. Collier. You should eat.
I really fancied a pint.
The heartbeat's replaced by the spluttering drone of an approaching V1 flying bomb.
We can all go down together.
What? In the basement?
Why not?
Hold hands and sing jolly songs.
Oh, help Mrs. Collier, yes?
She's better off in bed.
You need to come inside.
Jim stares upwards, ignoring Elena.
We're all right as long as we can still hear it.
Jim drops his bag and sits down. All the tension and pent-up anger seems to drain from him as he watches the sky.
Are you coming?
Elena shakes her head and runs inside, thus out of sight. The sound of the V1 gets louder as it nears. The engine sputters and cuts out so that it can fall. Jim closes his eyes. There's silence for a few seconds, then an explosion somewhere off in the distance. Jim opens his eyes. He looks disappointed. He picks up his bag and heads inside. Lights down.
If you are writing a script, joining a group like Southwest Scriptwriters is an excellent move. It not only enables you to hear some of your play out loud, but the conversation and comments around the craft of writing is invaluable at whatever stage you're at.
Firstly, it's always a good idea to hit the ground running with your script and create some tension. Here's Tim Mussey.
I like the way they were talking kind of across purposes all the time. I thought that worked very well. It was nice, the kind of sort of initial meeting. They've both got their very clear objectives. He's looking for somewhere to have a drink, and they get the woman down from upstairs. And so they always talk across each other, which I really liked.
Some of my ideas of sound aren't just naturalistic effects, but to hopefully generate questions in the mind of the audience. Here's Steph Weston and Bruce Fellows.
What is the significance of the heartbeat? It's a very distinctive sound, isn't it? The human heartbeat.
When I heard that, I took it either that perhaps it was the old lady upstairs, you could suddenly hear her heartbeat, or him listening, waiting for the bomb, and possibly merging in with the bomb itself, which was not a dissimilar sort of sound.
Well, yes, to all of the above. Whether it's the feeling of impending doom, the landlady's stress, or possibly Jim waiting for the bomb.
Because, I mean, that's the kind of thing, I don't know, when you leave the theatre or the cinema, if you're still talking about things like that, it makes it even more interesting.
As Bruce rightly points out, I want to provoke questions in the audience rather than try and answer all of them. So maybe these sounds won't necessarily be entirely naturalistic. There could be something more mechanical going on with just the feeling of a heartbeat. Now, all these things are in no way polished mixes. It's just a way of trying out some ideas. Remember, I'm not trying to make an audio play. This play will be performed live, COVID permitting, to an audience. So sound placement and spatial audio in the environment will be essential. Here's Bryony Pope.
I very much like the idea that your sounds so far seem to have come from overhead. It's very menacing. It's quite pressurising. You're waiting for the doodlebug. And you're hearing things from upstairs. It kind of gives me a slight sense of gaslight, when you've got stuff happening in the attic. And there's something about it which I think makes it much better than if it was at the same level as you.
The next thing in your play to do is to set out your stall. Let the audience know who they're watching and where they are, and try not to overburden them with information or exposition. Here's Bryony, Steph and Bruce with Michael Clark.
Yeah, I like the way that you had the conversation with their different agendas, which brought in their characterisation and expositional detail. I thought that it was done very well. I felt that we got to know quite a lot about their backgrounds and their frustrations and sadness in a very short space of time, which I thought was very good.
They're very different, aren't they? Because Jim seems very bitter, and Helena's obviously been through a hell of a lot, and yet she doesn't seem bitter at all, really, does she?
I think it's good to highlight that at that period, people from Czechoslovakia and Austria were identified in England in the 40s as being part of the German machine. And I think it's quite cool that Adrian has highlighted that people from Czechoslovakia and Austria are probably opposed to the Nazi regime and are trying to find sort of a haven within England.
As a further part of the process, I got to work with two talented actors, Chris Yap and George Arona. This time, we had the chance to read through the play a few times over Zoom and discuss the characters. Then, we met in person in a rehearsal room to get it up on its feet. Here's a snippet from the second present-day timeline where the two characters discuss the tree outside the flat.
Just now, when...
Yes?
When you were dancing?
You were watching.
Yeah, I...
Oh, God. Oh, I'm so embarrassed.
No, don't be.
Oh, I shouldn't have.
No, it's fine.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be. I'd do a lot worse. I mean, at least you've got rhythm.
I don't often get the chance to play music.
No? But afterwards, you...
What?
You look so sad.
Did I?
Is there anything?
What? No, it was nothing.
Are you sure?
It's probably the tree.
The tree.
The one outside?
Oh, it is a bit of a monster.
It's beautiful.
It's seen better days.
They're going to cut it down, you see.
Is it dangerous?
Why would you say that?
Well, just, you know, I guess they wouldn't cut it down for no reason.
It got struck by lightning last month.
Oh, it is a bit mangled.
It's been here for years.
Yeah, I can see.
It's a shelter for living things.
Still, you know, if it might hurt someone...
Oh, why would it? It's damaged, that's all. Just because it suffered doesn't mean it would hurt someone else.
Yeah, but it could. I mean, it doesn't look safe. I mean, look, that branch is clawing at the windows.
Well, so that's the answer. Cut it out, pull it down like something rotten.
You wouldn't want a limb come crashing through your window.
Well, it might be stronger than you think.
Yeah, I suppose. Look, I've got nothing against the tree. I only just got here.
My little girl Daisy and I watch it change. Yeah, every season from my window.
Nothing lasts forever.
Here's Steph, Carol and Bruce with Simon Jenner.
I liked the subtext about the relationship between her and her husband talking about the tree. I did like it. My immediate thought was, well, that's obviously the husband that she's talking about. So I'm wondering if that's what everyone else would think as well, or maybe, I don't know.
I didn't see it as an analogy for her husband.
I didn't either. He was taking the husband down. He was criticising him without knowing him.
Neither did I. Aid, can I just say before we all bugger off, when I was reading it and, you know, hearing the bits tonight, I just thought it was a proper good play, whatever the sound effects. You know, again, sound effects or no, I'd be very happy to watch that in the theatre and walk out thinking I had a good night and lots to talk about. Really, really interesting.
Of course, it's nice to hear flattering comments and good feedback on your script. And at this stage, it's not all about air raid sirens or the sound of E1 bombs. But it's incredibly valuable to hear people question the script. That way, you can work out whether what's actually on the page is succeeding in what you hoped it would. Getting the piece on its feet, or in this case, hearing the words out loud via Zoom, was an essential next step. Now, what struck me when we began to speak the words, and I considered the possible sound of the play, was how it might all come together. There are obvious similarities with sound design for TV and film, and even an audio drama. These experiences are carefully crafted within a controlled environment to be absorbed in that way. You could think of watching a film as essentially viewing a two-dimensional story on screen, and then, in the case of a great cinema, the sound then gives the viewer a three-dimensional experience, enabling the audience to feel more immersed in the action. With theatre, the actors and set are there, in full three dimensions right in front of the audience. The performers create a three-dimensional sound with their voices and movements. Every step they take, every prop they move, even the sounds of their costumes swishing, are all giving the audience that immersive experience. So rather than smothering that live atmosphere with too much additional sound, it made me think about how I may be able to make that three-dimensional performance a little deeper or wider and hopefully a little richer. And that led me back to thinking how I could create sound for the performers to interact or respond to in the performance space. When I look back at the time I spent playing with sounds, making strange atmospheres with different Foley effects, I do feel it helped me craft parts of my play and helped me think about my writing. It certainly inspired scenes as I wrote them, and it created a varied sound palette for me to dip into when this play eventually goes into proper rehearsals. But I do feel that the sound design for the performance will come out of the collaboration of what is happening on stage with the actors and the lighting and the set, rather than something constructed around the script or the audio alone. One of the magical things I love about the theatre is how things come together during the collaborative process of making,
sometimes by design, but more often than not, by accident. Listening to the people you're working with, the sharing of ideas, skills and inspiration, all those things create the play. Not just the words on the page, the script. Well, that's just where the fun starts. Always remember, it's called a play for a reason. I'm very happy with the script I've written, and it's been interesting and fun to truly delve into sound during the writing of this particular project. But I feel that the real work will begin when the rest of the creative team assemble and we look at the space that we're going to be performing the play in, and then start piecing all the different bits together, including the sound design. That will then, hopefully, make a great night out for the audience. Brassworks Theatre will now take my play on with further development, and we very much hope that we'll be able to take it into a full production later this year. So I hope that you will get the chance to see it all come together as one. Thanks for listening. And as for the Playing with Words podcast, I will be back soon with a new series looking at Brassworks Theatre and its amazing past and what will come out of its future. So look out for more episodes. You've been listening to the Playing with Words podcast with me, Adrian Harris, and thanks to Southwest scriptwriters and actors Chris Yap and George Arona. This podcast is produced in association with Brassworks Theatre.